Good afternoon, and welcome to the Links Incorporated LinkedIn Learning Connected in Conversations podcast. I am National President Kimberly Jeffries Leonard. The Links Incorporated is honored to partner with Health and Human Services for their COVID-19 public education campaign, We Can Do This, to increase public confidence in and uptake of the COVID-19 vaccines while reinforcing basic prevention measures such as mask wearing and social distancing. In today's episode, we will be discussing the intersection of COVID-19 and Black lives, and I am honored to speak with Yvonne Turner-Johnson, MD, Chief Medical Officer and Vice President at South Miami Hospital, Andrea Jackson-Gavin, Director of Engagement and Scholarship at Atlanta University Center, Robert W. Woodruff Library, and Deidre Jr., Vice President of Business Development of the YMCA of the Rockies, all who happen to be members of the Links Incorporated. Good afternoon, ladies.
Good afternoon.
Let's get started with some questions. I'm going to start with Dr. Johnson. There has been a lot of hesitancy around the vaccine in general, especially in our community. Can you give us any insight into what might be driving this?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on. It's always a pleasure for me to speak about COVID-19. It has really devastated so many aspects of our community. I love having the opportunity to educate on it. You know, it's been an interesting experience talking to members of the African American community. Like many other members of other communities, there has been some concern about the vaccine from the very beginning. I think part of it was just the speed at which the vaccine was developed, which was a great thing that it was, that so much money and effort was put into it. And it was a platform that was actually available even before it was applied to COVID-19 vaccines. So this mRNA platform was something that had been developed over the last few years. This was applied to the COVID-19 vaccine. So it wasn't totally new. They weren't starting from ground zero. But in a lot of people's minds, you know, you heard about this virus in December of 2019 and really more into 2020. And then all of a sudden in December of 2020, here it is. And so, of course, there's a lot of concern about how safe is something that happens so quickly. And typically with vaccines, we spend years and years testing them because you're treating a population that you're preventing a disease. And so you're not treating something that somebody already has. You're giving it to a healthy person to prevent them from getting sick. So there's always a lot more rigor in terms of the testing that goes on there. But I have to say, this vaccine has been tested in the same way that other vaccines were tested. It was just done in a much more rapid fashion. So yes, we know that it's safe, particularly in the short term. Can anyone tell you what happens 10 years from now? Absolutely not, because we don't know what happens 10 years from now. But that's the same thing with the virus. We don't know what's going to happen 10 years from now. Many of us got chickenpox. And, you know, 30 years later, we got shingles. So, you know, you don't know what's going to happen with the vaccine or the virus, but we do know in the short term that it's safe. So I think there was that general issue with how quickly the vaccine came out. But then I think specific to the Black community were some issues about the history of testing medicines or testing diseases in our community. Mm-hmm. And the Tuskegee experiment is one of those that was always brought to the fore. You know, the unfortunate thing for me is that the Tuskegee experiment denied us treatment. So, you know, we were testing what happens when you get syphilis. And during the experiment, which many people didn't even know they were participating in, which was the big problem, the cure for syphilis came out. But it was denied those people who were in the experiment because they wanted to continue to see, well, what happens as time goes on. And so the analogy for me was that taking the experience of that experiment, the Tuskegee experiment, in the Black community, we actually continued it because here we had a treatment or at least a prevention for disease, and we were denying ourselves that by upholding the experimentation that was done on us. So, you know, I think a lot of that was part of it. And then I spoke to some folks, even some of our own members who were hesitant. And part of the issue was the idea that they were being told what to do and being shamed when they questioned whether it was the right thing. Mm-hmm. And that led me to really change tack, because I understood that, you know, we're, when you actually sit down and talk to people about what their concerns are, many had very legitimate concerns. Some people, you know, had very way out ideas, you know, it was going to be used to track me and all of that. And I'm like, if you have a phone, you know, you don't even have to worry about any other mechanisms of tracking you, you know? Mm-hmm. But that people had some very legitimate concerns. You had to sit down and speak to those specific concerns, whether it was about pregnancy, whether it was about fertility, whether it was about how long the vaccine had been tested. You know, if you actually sat down and talked to people and gave them the platform to make a choice, that really affected how they felt like they were empowered by the information to make a choice. And the vast majority of people that I talked to like that made the choice that I thought was the right choice to get vaccinated.
So, you know, that's very interesting that you kind of took a whole historical reason why so many people in our community were hesitant to get vaccinated. I know Andrea has a story. She wears a number of hats. She is the vice president in her Dogwood City chapter, which she's the caretaker of for the membership of the chapter. But in her day job, she specializes in preserving African American and HBCU history. So I know you were so very aware of all of these reasons for vaccine hesitancy in the Black community. I mean, you know, just as Yvonne said, Tuskegee continues to come up when we talk about this. But what were your concerns about getting vaccinated? Because you had someone else to worry about at that time.
Yes, thank you. And I'm so glad that Yvonne brought up the point about the Tuskegee experiment, because I heard that many times and I had to counter that as well, because when you are a student of history, then you really know, you know, it wasn't that we were given something that made us more ill. So we had to keep sharing that information, you know, even in my hesitancy. It's like, okay, you can be hesitant, but don't say, you know, you're hesitant because of Tuskegee experiment. Mm-hmm. That's not the case. But for me, I always was pretty sure that I would take the vaccine. I have to admit, I was one of those folks that was like, well, let's see what happens when a couple other people take it. You know, that's kind of where my head was in the early days. But I, my sister, my husband, my brother-in-law all have affiliation with CDC, and they are health scientists and doctors and, you know, felt strongly that it would be safe for us. For me personally, I had a child, a young baby, and I was still breastfeeding. And not that it makes much difference, but I was direct breastfeeding at this time, you know. So I was very concerned about that. There was not a lot of information out about how the vaccine might affect babies, young, you know, under the age of 2. Let alone, I mean, now we're still, you know, waiting for something for 2 to 4 year olds, or even younger than that. But I was just very concerned about that for my baby. But I'll tell you, we have an 11-year-old as well, and she was younger than 2 at that time. She was not back in daycare, but I knew she would be, you know, eventually. And I think, you know, at one point we said, you know, I'll have to go back to work sometime soon. The kids are going to go back to school, daycare. We've got to protect ourselves. We've got to try to do as best a bubble as we can around, you know, ourselves, around the kids. And then I will tell you, I was very thankful for so many of the Lynx webinars. I remember attending one from West Georgia chapter, and I specifically asked questions about, you know, breastfeeding. And I think at that time there was more evidence. And so I was able to hear directly from doctors and other health scientists about the findings that they, you know, that they had, in addition to speaking with my pediatrician. And I would just say, I have to brag, one of our Dogwood City members is on the COVID task force. And I talked to her too, because she's in maternal health. So I was really armed with a lot of information, read a lot about it, and eventually said, okay, great, I'm gonna take the vaccine. And I know that some of these antibodies, you know, will help my baby ultimately. So I was glad to do it. And then at one point thought, did I wait too late? So then, you know, that was kind of a thing. So she stopped breastfeeding at 22 months. I got the vaccine in late May. I was fully vaccinated by late May, and that was about 20 months. So 2 months of hopefully getting something from me. And so, you know, she has not caught COVID yet. I did this year, this Omicron, but very light symptoms. And I tell anybody, I am convinced without the vaccination and booster, it would have been a different story. And I'm very thankful.
I'm glad you got it too, which leads us to our next guest, Deidre Jr. Deidre has a story to tell, and I'll never forget when I got the call very early in the pandemic about the fact that Deidre had COVID. And we know at that point, even now, there's much anxiety about COVID and what happens when you get it, and everyone's outcome is different. But getting it so early in the pandemic, pre-vaccination, talk a little bit about that and tell us, what was your experience? Do you have the residual effects now? And how this impacts your feelings about the vaccine?
So thank you for having me, Kim. And Kim was there with me throughout that whole process. But I did get COVID. March 13th is when I was checked into the hospital, March 13th of 2020. And I got it from work, being at a work event. There was someone that attended the conference that had been had a confirmed COVID case. And I heard through the grapevine, not through the company, but I heard through the grapevine that someone had a confirmed case of COVID at a conference that I booked, that no one, not the customer, not the employer, shared with me. They shared it with other people, but they did not share it with me. And, you know, it was so ironic because I had just been on a trip the week before, and we were laughing about COVID. And because we were like, they keep talking about it, they keep talking about it. And when I got back and when I'd gone to the conference and I got sick, I didn't realize the impact that it had on me specifically as a breast cancer survivor. I didn't hear that piece that if you are have a pre-existing condition and your immune system has been compromised. I never heard that. And so I didn't understand until after the fact. 2 weeks after I had been out of the hospital, I was hospitalized for 9 days. And just the whole process of once I got sick and once I decided to go to the doctor, I had to take a Uber to the doctor because I was so weak. I had been sick for 3 days, in bed for 3 days. And once I learned that I had been exposed to COVID while I was at the doctor's office, the doctor, you know, quickly rerouted me to the emergency room, and my employer's, the attorney, reached out to me and shared with me that I needed to go to the emergency room. And just that it was like being in a sci-fi movie. You know, I was instructed to have my son come home. I was instructed to go to a specific hospital, and getting to the hospital and going there and being greeted in hazmat suit. It was just, I had to keep telling myself, okay, you know, this is something different. Don't feel weird about it. And so it was just a very odd experience. And when I finally got word that I actually was COVID positive, I was very fearful. I was afraid for my life. I don't know that I had ever been that afraid before. I would have rather have had cancer, because at least with cancer, they have answers. They can tell you what's going to happen. At least that was my experience with cancer. There was a healthcare plan to save me. But in this instance, there was not that. There was just nothing but fear, to the degree that the doctor wouldn't even come into my room because he told me that it was airborne. And at that time, that was new information. And then they would tell you things like, well, you go home, and if your symptoms change, then come back. Well, what does that mean to someone, a strong Black woman that's trying to stay alive for her child? I have a son. And as I went home, and thanks to some sisters, Andrea, in your chapter, Cicely Hull, I was in touch with them. They're dear friends of mine. And if it was not for them, I wouldn't be here today. They were the ones that listened to what I was saying about what my symptoms were. Cece was the one that said, go to the hospital right now. And I was like, I can't drive, call an ambulance. And so what I learned from that experience is that you have to advocate for yourself in healthcare. I mean, as simple as when I got back to the hospital and I was laying in the bed and I said to Cece, I go, I feel like I need help breathing. And she said, tell the nurse. And when I told them, when I tried to get the nurse to even come into the room, she wouldn't come. And then when I shared with her what my challenge was, she wasn't listening. And so Cece was the one that educated my mom and my sister on how to advocate for me while I was in the hospital. And so my mom had to call the hospital to tell them to give me oxygen. And only until then did I get the oxygen. And so that just was that set the course for the 9 days that I stayed in the hospital. I was essentially on my own. Even when they rolled me through the hospital, as they were checking me in, the people knew that I had COVID because I was one of the first 8 cases in Las Vegas. You could see the staff running because they had glass windows. I would see them running, trying to get out of the way. And I had to keep telling myself, don't be mad at them. Don't feel any certain way. The uncertainty, these people are no longer focused on your health care. They are following protocol. And so that was my experience. I felt like my health care did not matter because there was so much fear in the hospital that I was in that I had to figure out how to listen to them, how to help myself in this situation, get through this COVID, because I did not feel like they were focused on my health care. They were focused on making sure that they themselves did not get COVID. And so, you know, after it was all said and done, I was out of the hospital. After about 90 days, my lungs were damaged. And so I was on a steroid regimen. And I just took the stance of, I'm going to do like what the athletes do. When the athletes get sick, they go and, you know, if your lungs are not functioning, you go figure out how to make them function. So I walked miles. I walked so many miles that I ended up in physical therapy because that something went wrong with my ankle. I couldn't get past 7 miles a day. And I was like, my hip hurts. I don't understand. I'm trying to get these lungs right. And I'm trying to get to 10 miles a day and it won't work. And so that was the residual for me, was my lungs were damaged. But I was very defiant in making sure that my lungs were healed. My regular physician put me on a steroid regimen because, again, the hospital, when they released me, there was no guidance. They told me to follow up with the doctor in 30 days. And, you know, it defied logic, but there was just something in me and with my sisters that were like, no, that's not right. You need to go to your doctor. And thank gosh, the physician that I have was about saving my life. She had been with me through breast cancer and I became her guinea pig with COVID. She was like, yes, come in. We're going to get this done. And so the lung damage is what I had, but she got that under control within 90 days. Then, you know, the things that were not documented, I had COVID fog, I had extreme fatigue. And, you know, with breast cancer after my radiation, I had extreme fatigue for years. So this extreme fatigue did not correlate with me having COVID. I just thought my extreme fatigue because at that time I was 7 years cancer free. And that's extreme fatigue kind of goes away after a certain time frame. But I had the extreme fatigue and I absolutely had COVID fog. And I distinctly remember that because I had to take my son off to college. And I just remember thinking, I have got to get it together. I don't know why I'm so tired, why I'm driving and it's so exhausted, but I had no idea. No one was reporting that. No one, even my regular physician. But today I feel fine. I don't know if my forgetfulness is because of COVID or if it's because I'm about to be 50 this year.
That's but, 2 years. Did you get vaccinated? Have you been vaccinated?
I did get vaccinated. I can tell you that as they were talking about the vaccination, I was one of the first ones that was hearing all the rumors. Oh, don't do this, Tuskegee. You know, they're trying to use us as an experiment. It's not FDA approved. I was like, I am not getting the vaccine until someone gives me some assurance, because I had no faith in the healthcare system at that time. But, you know, Cece was like, you're getting the vaccine. I was like, well, all right. You saved my life once. You can. Okay. I'll do it. No explanation. Well,
I think that I'm so glad that you had the support around you to get you to the hospital in time, because that really was a very, it was terrifying. It was terrifying for all of us. And we know that those were some of the outcomes of people who got COVID early in the pandemic. I'm so glad that you had a trusted voice, which is really critical to be able to say, get this safe vaccine. As Yvonne said, these things didn't just pop up. You know, they've had people in place studying vaccines for years. All the other vaccines we take, we're just hearing about this because COVID has become such a big issue because of the way it's ravaging the world, and it's in our communities especially. And you know, Yvonne, Deirdre was kind of talking about her experience in the hospital, but I know in your position as the chief medical officer and vice president, you've seen it all. You are dealing with COVID day in, day out. People who are coming in with COVID, people who are coming in who have COVID. That's another big thing. We've got people who are coming into hospitals who are not coming in because of COVID, but we find out that they have COVID. Tell us a little bit about what you see. And what are some of the misnomers that persist? If you can dispel them for us, for this audience, we'd be very grateful.
Well, you know what? I'm really disheartened to hear the experience that was just recounted. And I was so proud of the medical staff at my hospital and within my health system that despite the not knowing, they put themselves out there and on the line. And well, we did modify the amount of people that had to go in to see someone who we knew had COVID or suspected had COVID, and we limited that. We never neglected anyone in the way that was described. And, you know, that's really disheartening to hear. But I think for the vast majority of health caregivers, they really did put themselves out there and took care of people the way that we have taken an oath to do. And I was pleased that that was the case. But there was just so much that was unknown early in the disease, even how it was transmitted. You heard, you know, that it was airborne by some people. Others said it's droplets, so that made a difference in what type of PPE we were supposed to wear. And, you know, there were shortages of PPE. So there was a whole lot. There were shortages of testing, which is why it could be days, sometimes more than a week, before you could actually even confirm that somebody had COVID-19. So, you know, a lot has changed over the course of the 2 years now, nearly, that we've been dealing with it. And so a lot has changed also in what you just asked about. You know, and initially people were coming in and being admitted for COVID-19. So, you know, we've gone through several waves in Florida, where I work. We've gone through five distinct waves of where we've had alarmingly high numbers of people hospitalized. And in the first four waves, they were being hospitalized for COVID, because the nature of the disease, the first one, many people got it. Mm-hmm. And as you said, it was a variable course, but many people got very, very sick, as was described, and people died, and people ended up on ventilators, and mm-hmm. some never came off, and, you know, mm-hmm. fortunately, some did, but people got very, very sick. And then when Delta came, all bets were off, because, you know, once upon a time, we talked about the fact that if you had predisposing conditions like cancer or lung disease or heart disease, but when we got Delta, even people who had been healthy were getting sick enough to be hospitalized. The sad part about that was after the vaccine was available. And so those were all very preventable illnesses and preventable deaths. Omicron, which is what is the predominant variant out there now with us, so many people are getting it because it's much more contagious than the first several variants, than the first two variants that we had, the alpha variant, so to speak, and then the Delta. So Omicron is so much more contagious. Many of us have gotten it. But it's less severe disease. So mm-hmm. there are people who are coming into the hospital now for their heart attacks, their strokes, their broken legs, their, you know, whatever. And we find that they also have COVID because we test everyone when they come into the hospital. So they're not necessarily being treated for COVID when they come into the hospital, although some are still, but we're having to accommodate taking care of those other things for people who have COVID, because we're still trying not to spread COVID within the hospital, either among the employees or among other patients. So we do have to take those special precautions when people have COVID. That doesn't mean nobody goes into your room, and that should not mean that. And if that's the experience that you're having when you're hospitalized with COVID or for COVID, that is not correct. People should be going in to see you. We have appropriate PPE to protect ourselves from getting disease. And one thing I will have to tell you is that among the staff that have gotten COVID, very, very few have gotten it in the hospital. And in fact, until Omicron, we really didn't have a staff problem because our staff was so well protected in the hospital. We always wore masks. I know they work. There's no controversy about that as far as I'm concerned that they work because we didn't get sick. The people who got sick were the ones among our staff, even were the people who were going out and doing other things socially, or they had kids who were out and about. And, you know, I can't tell you, the vast majority of my medical staff would call me and say, hey, you know, my kid went to this pool party. And now I found out that somebody had COVID. Can I get tested? And, you know, that was how we went down. We did not get COVID from our patients because we protect ourselves from our patients. And we know that they have it. And we take the appropriate precautions. So, you know, I think the hospital is a safe place. People should not resist coming if you have some illness. And that was a big problem also, that people weren't coming until they were half dead from their heart attack, or they were delaying care for their stroke, or they weren't getting their colonoscopies because, you know, they were fearful of getting COVID. You know, don't go out to the party, don't go shopping, but come to the hospital because, you know, we will protect you from getting COVID.
I'm so glad to hear you say that, Yvonne, because, you know, these things have become so politicized. I don't even want to say lately, they've become so politicized, period. And so you have these, you know, masks versus no mask, my right to wear a mask, vaccines, and there are people who cannot get vaccinated. We know that. And so those of us who can, that's even more reason to get vaccinated so we can protect the ones who cannot. But I'm going to put this out there to everybody. I'm going to ask Andrea to start. You know, it's almost like you got two sides of the coin. You know, you got some of your family who says, yes, we're going to be vaccinated. And some of your family who is like, no, I'm not, because of these issues. I mean, even he's 21 now. When he was home from school, when they were virtual, he's like, well, you know, I have real concerns. And I'm like, and you, as you work those out, I'm driving you over to get vaccinated. Because in my house, you're going to get vaccinated. And so how do you manage being in the position where you've got family who are on kind of both sides of the fence, plus, you know, this whole element of when, you know, you've got to be out in the public, but you've got to come home. You know, how do you all manage that? And how do you take steps to ensure that everybody's healthy?
Yes, thank you. We have some real politics, even in my immediate family. It has been very interesting, but more important than that, I can talk about the library where I work in the Atlanta University Center. We serve four colleges and universities, HBCUs, y'all know them, Spelman, Morehouse, Clark Atlanta, and the Interdenominational Theological Center. And thank God they have worked so well together with a COVID task force between the schools, the AUC consortium, and everybody is on the same page. You know, the regular testing, the consistency, in this library, everybody, you have to be masked up. For some events around the campuses, you have to have been vaccinated, but, you know, except for those who may have an exemption or a special exception due to, you know, health or religious beliefs. But I have felt very safe. I have felt very confident with our leadership across all the Atlanta University Center. And I think a lot of our HBCUs are doing a great job in keeping the students safe. I'm sure many universities, period, many academic institutions. It's so hard. I mean, our son is doing virtual school, and he is actually doing very well with it. But I know so many who struggle. You know, I think it's just been very fortunate for us that he is a good virtual student. So I am actually I and my toddler are the only ones leaving the house on a, you know, very regular basis. And we have to pick and choose. You know, it's like, okay, now that I had COVID and I was the only one in the household, it's like, I'm going to the grocery store more. And of course, with my mask and stuff, but it's like, okay, well, perhaps I have the antibodies, so let me go to the store if we, you know, if we have to go and things like that. But we're very deliberate about it, you know, and I have a sister here who just knew she was, you know, super on and couldn't wait to take care of the babies and stuff. And we don't get to see each other as much because their children go to school regularly and we all are trying to be safe. And so it's a lot of maneuvering, managing, and deliberate, you know, intentional movement. But, you know, we are all supporting each other and just trying to stay safe, just doing the best that we can.
Deirdre, Dr. Johnson, are any of you all experiencing these kind of discourses within your family about vaccinations? And if so, how are you managing that?
If you could have seen me December 26th, the day after Christmas, when I went back, I moved to Colorado since then, and I went back home to Vegas to spend Christmas with the family. And I cried because of the sheer politics within the family. It is so controversial. And despite the fact that they all watched what happened to me, I still have, even including my son, that did not want to get vaccinated. Now, since then, he has been vaccinated, but I still have some immediate family that has not been vaccinated. And then I've got family that feels very strongly about the fact that they're not vaccinated. And so it just made for my Christmas to not be the rose-colored glasses of Christmas that I preferred to have, because we couldn't all come together like I wanted to, like we had always done for the years when I lived in Vegas, and it was heartbreaking to me. Mm-hmm. And so I have just decided that, I mean, I removed myself from that situation because I could, and just spent the rest of my time with my son. But, you know, I love my family. And I have just decided that, you know what, I am going to protect myself. I'm going to do everything to protect myself. I'm going to make sure that my son continues to stay informed and protects himself, and pray that the rest of my family comes along. They ultimately all ended up getting COVID while I was also in Vegas. But, you know, it's so controversial, and it causes such emotion amongst the family that it's like, it doesn't matter how mad you get at them or what stories you tell. People have just decided to make up their mind on what they will and will not do. And I can't control what others do. I can control what Deirdre does. Mm-hmm. And I can respect, I might not like your decision, but we're adults, and that's when you have to agree to disagree. And, you know, you just have to take, I have just decided to take measures, for myself and make sure that I stay as safe as I can. And I just know that I'm risking my life when I go around that family that's not vaccinated. But I also believe that because I had COVID, because I've taken the vaccine, because I have the boosters, in my own little head, I should not get sick for the next 10 years. So I feel like I have maybe, and I don't know that it to be true, but maybe I have a little more protection than others. But I am still cautious with when I go over my family, and I'm not going to isolate them because of their choices.
And I'm sure you're masked also, which is another layer of protection, as Dr. Johnson indicated.
Yes.
Yes. Dr. Johnson, you want to weigh in on this?
No, I agree with Deirdre that she is protecting herself, and that's what each of us does when we get vaccinated. We protect ourselves, and particularly when we get vaccinated and boosted. And the booster really does make a difference in terms of your risk of being hospitalized and your risk of dying. And I will tell you, when people talk about, you know, well, what difference does it make? You know, you got COVID, you got vaccinated and you got COVID. And I'll tell you, I got COVID myself. as did my whole family. My whole family was vaccinated. And I just praised God when I got vaccinated. It was such a sense of relief. My husband has chronic lung disease from his firefighting days.
And my husband's a firefighter too, so I feel your pain.
Exactly. So, you know, I wanted to make sure I did everything to protect him, even though I was going in, you know, to the COVID den every day. So it was such a blessing. We didn't have that issue in our immediate family, but certainly, you know, extended family, that has been an issue. But really, when you choose to get vaccinated, you are protecting yourself. And while, yes, it would be helpful, it's less risk if the others around you have been vaccinated too, because then there's less chance of you getting exposed. But even if you get exposed and you are test positive for COVID, if you've been vaccinated and you've been boosted, the chances of you ending up in a hospital or dead are 20 times less than the people who have not been vaccinated. So, you know, whether it was Delta or even Omicron, the folks that have been dying in our hospitals are unvaccinated, mm-hmm. almost mm-hmm. exclusively. There are few exceptions of people who may have been vaccinated, but had severe immunocompromising conditions. But the vast majority of the people who are dying in our ICUs, and right now, you know, every day we have people that are dying in our ICUs now, even as Omicron wanes, because those people have been, you know, taken care of for a long time. They battle, they fight. But when they ultimately lose the fight, you know, it's kind of always on the downside of the surge. And that's where we are now. And we're starting to see, you know, so many people who were battling this dying. And they were unvaccinated. And to me, that's the tragedy, because it was an unnecessary death. It was a preventable death, because they could have been vaccinated and we know they wouldn't have passed away. But as Deirdre said, you know, everyone makes their choice as an adult. And, you know, our charge is to educate people. And I appreciate this opportunity, because, you know, that's what we're able to do, is to educate people about what are the benefits and what are the risks. And, you know, to me, the benefits far outweigh the risk of something that I see every day and have seen every day for the last 2 years. There's, you know, just not a downside to getting vaccinated.
You know, it seems like the data changes so rapidly. And one day we've got one set of data, and the next day we got the other set of data. I think that what has been consistent is that the protective measures that have been outlined are the protective measures, and they work. But how can people stay up to date on the data, Dr. Johnson, on the new information that comes out about COVID-19?
Well, the CDC website, I think, is the best source of up-to-date information, because it is changing. And I think that is also a point that you make, is that we have to acknowledge that we don't know everything. And we haven't known everything. This is a work in progress. We are learning about this disease as we go along. And so what we say, you know, what we said 2 years ago, we've learned since then. And what we might be saying right now, we may learn some more later on. In fact, I'm sure that we will learn as we go along. And the other thing that I want to point out is that this virus is learning, and it changes. The mm-hmm. virus learns how to get around our immune system. Mm-hmm. So when people say, oh, well, what's the point of doing this or that? There is a point of doing it at the time for this particular virus at this stage. The fact that, you know, Omicron was far more infectious, so that you didn't necessarily get Delta if you were vaccinated. You may have gotten Omicron despite being vaccinated, because the virus changes. And so, you know, that's what I think we have to keep in mind. And that's why, you know, your point is very well made, that the CDC website is a place to stay up to date, because things change. Mm-hmm. Our information changes, the virus changes, and you have to stay up to date with it.
You know, one of the things that we're trying to do in the Links Incorporated is really drive our members and our communities, just as importantly, to those trusted places and those trusted voices. That's why I'm so glad that you all are here, because there's a lot to take in and it's a lot to cover. And you know, when we're dealing with ourselves and our families and our communities, we want to make sure we're getting the best information out there. I'm a proud graduate of 3 HBCUs, and I'm so very excited, you know, very proud to be able to say that. Andrea, you are managing, you are working with 4. You are the students, the faculty, the staff, the administration at 4. How are they doing? Because I think that the AU Center is really reflective of our HBCUs. How are they doing in managing this pandemic?
Yes, they are meeting very regularly. We get updates from our library administration, ongoing. And as Yvonne mentioned, and you mentioned, things are changing, you know, so what was the standard before might change, or how often we are testing might change. But the schools, like I mentioned before, are very collaborative, and they are working together and trying to be very consistent, so that because the students all take courses, you know, on each other's campuses, that is very prevalent, you know, in the AUC. You can take a class at one institution that's different from your home institution. And of course, the library is a site where the students all come together and study and socialize and, you know, all of that. So, you know, we are just doing our best to stay on top of the masks. And for all our Link members who are parents to college and university students, you know, reiterate that mask use. But, the students are doing a good job. And I will tell you, even if I have had to remind a student about wearing their mask, they don't, I have not had any, you know, ill reaction to that. You know, we probably get a different reaction if we're like, oh, could you hush, you know, could you be quiet? That might get them more upset than, you know, saying, you got to put that mask on over your nose, and they say, you're right, ma'am, thank you. So I think the AUC is doing an excellent job of just staying on top of things, knowing that the information is changing, knowing that the expectations are changing. And as HBCUs and many academic institutions have always done, they know that they have to care for their students while they are away from their families. This is of utmost priority. And so they're doing an excellent job just working together to do that.
Thank you. I'm glad to hear that. And of course, we wouldn't expect any less from our HBCUs and the young people there and those who are the caretakers of the young people there. Deirdre, before we end, I just want to ask you, your experience has been different from the rest of ours. How has it changed your life? And what would you leave us with?
You know, that whole situation, I always say that God has a funny way of showing you lessons. And in that situation, in this whole COVID situation, it's forced us to, at least forced me to just be still and reevaluate just all aspects of my life, specifically aspects of my life that I wasn't necessarily happy in, hence why I'm here in Colorado now. But the biggest takeaway for me was about advocating for health. Who knew that when you go to the doctor, you need to start questioning what the doctors are saying to you? Who knew that you need to do that with your family? I am so super paranoid now about anytime I'm sick, my family is sick, and when they go to the doctors, and I'm questioning things. Well, what did they say? That doesn't make sense. I mean, yeah, we all Google and question certain things, but now I am just adamant about it. And so, you know, my biggest takeaway is that, as Dr. CC Cole said, is you have to advocate for your family. You have to advocate for yourself in this medical space. We're not all blessed to have doctors like Yvonne's hospital. I wish that would have been my case. But my biggest takeaway is we have got to advocate for ourselves and for our family members that don't know that they need to advocate for themselves when they're not well. And don't just settle for exactly what they say. Get that second opinion. Call a friend that is in the medical field to ask the questions. Be intellectually curious about your health. That's my biggest takeaway from COVID.
Thank you. So staying with you, as we end, I'm going to ask you all the same question. we can do this together. I know we can, because we all want the best for ourselves, our families, and our communities. What is the last thing, Deidre Jr., you want to leave everyone who is listening here to hear from you about how we can do this to stop this spread?
I say we have to continue to respect each other's opinion. We cannot attack one another. We have to educate and be loving to one another and support each other as we get through this. But be sure to take care of self first, and then continue to love your family through the disagreements. And don't let this drive a wedge between your family, because you are in an agree to disagree situation. They will eventually come around, and all we can do is protect ourselves.
Thank you, Andrea. We can do this, but what would you like to leave us with to help stop the spread?
I just want to say, trust the science as best as you can. Look to people that you believe in and trust, the doctors that you do trust, the health scientists, health professionals that you do trust. Talk to them about it. If you're unsure, that's what I did. And remember that there are so many who are unable to be vaccinated, our babies, others with health conditions, immunocompromised. We need to do this for them. So get the vaccination. We can do this.
Thank you. Dr. Johnson, leave us with how we can do this together to stop the spread.
I agree with what the other sisters have said, that really do need to educate yourself so that you can make the right decision. I think everyone has the right to make a decision for themselves. What I say is, educate yourself so you make an intelligent, a science-based decision, and, you know, do reach out to those trusted advisors. We talked about the website, but, you know, most of us do have a primary doctor that we can talk to and get their opinion. And, you know, I think the vast majority of the doctors that I know were the first in line to get the vaccine. They were the first in line to get the boosters. And so they're not going to do something to themselves that they think is not healthy. And so they are going to advise you, the vast majority, to get vaccinated. And it will save your life from COVID-19. That, I can tell you, I have seen over and over and over.
All right. Well, there you have it. That's the word. This has been a truly insightful conversation from trusted voices, members of the Links Incorporated, who have all had different journeys during this pandemic and journeys to getting the COVID-19 vaccine and their booster shots. So I want to thank you, Dr. Yvonne Turner Johnson, Andrea Jackson Gavin, and Deidre Jr. for joining us today and providing this insight for our listeners. For more information about the We Can Do This campaign, I'm going to ask that you visit wecandothis.hhs.gov. And I want to thank you all for listening to this episode of the Links Incorporated LinkedIn Learning, Connected in Conversations podcast. For more information about the Links Incorporated, please visit linksinc.org. And thank you to our participants. Good evening.